Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 193. My name is John. I wonder what it's like to be a superhero. I wonder where I'd go if I could fly around downtown. There was a morning radio talk show host in San Antonio who would periodically read some magazine or website list of top 10 whatever. He would always preface the list by saying, "As you know, all lists are wrong." Why? Because it's not your list. Pick any topic. 20 best television sitcoms. 50 best American sports athletes. The chances your list matches mine would near winning the lottery kind of odds. This is my way of saying it all comes down to personal preferences, and I will respect your list if you respect mine. This podcast, I'm going to rank every DC live-action theatrical release, from worst to best, based on how I feel about them, and give some quick thoughts on each. I'm trying to keep it under a minute, but I don't think I'm going to be successful. Once again, my opinion, and I will respect yours if you respect mine. Yes, I've seen every single one of these movies, most of them multiple times, and all of them at least once in the past few years. This list will only be for live-action movies, not serials, with characters featured in DC Comics. Movies from DC imprints, such as V for Vendetta, Red, and History of Violence, as well as animated movies like Batman Mask of the Phantasm, are not included. The theatrical release of Justice League and the Snyder Cut are listed separately because the changes are substantial enough for me to consider them different movies. I do not list Batgirl because it was only shown at a couple of test screenings and then shelved, so there's no way that I know of to watch it. I anticipate some will think that I am unfair to certain older movies, that they may feel are deserving of higher rankings. Well, first off, this is my list. I can do what I want with it. Second, most of the older movies have lost some of their charm for me. Nostalgia is great and all, but I'm tired of the camp and the silliness of the past, and for that matter, the self-depreciating meta-jokes in modern movies. Comic books have been for more than just kids since the 70s. They are the modern myths and don't need to apologize for what they are. Having fun is one thing, but not taking your characters seriously and treating heroes and/or villains like they're glorified kiddie cartoons will always lose points with me. I will admit my affinity for certain characters or actors help raise their movies on the list, and I will acknowledge those instances in the relatively quick reviews. And lastly, I think the more a movie is worth rewatching, or the more I enjoy rewatching it, the higher it tends to skew on my list. So don't go asking me, how could I put a movie you don't like ahead of a movie you think is better? I just told you my thought process. All right? Here we go. Number 43. The Return of Swamp Thing. A very poorly conceived sequel to the Wes Craven original. Not even Dick Duroc returning to the titular hero was able to save this from the bottom spot. The plot is something better suited for a 1950s B-movie. There's the silly subplot of two backwoods children trying to get a photograph of Swamp Thing. There's a scene where two henchmen argue over who has the coolest scar. Louis Jourdan's performance has all the depth of an embarrassed actor hoping to collect his check and run. And worst, they failed miserably in incorporating concepts from Alan Moore's iconic comic run. The best way to watch this movie is the Riff Tracks live version they did a couple of years back, which I highly recommend. Number 42, Catwoman. This will come up again shortly, but you do not give non-powered characters superpowers. It ruins the character. The whole "she's acting like a cat" shtick got cheesy real fast. The nods to Eartha Kitt and Julie Newmar only reminded us of better campiness. And hey, let's have our female superhero battle an evil cosmetics company. Girl power! Not that this was really Catwoman anyway. It's Catwoman in title only. It has no other elements of the comic book character, which, according to an interview with one of the writers in 2025, was due to a rights issue. Well, that just means they should never have done it. And even the star of the movie agrees. Number 41. Joker, Folie à Deux. Take one of the most filthy, unsettling, bleak takes on the Joker character and turn it into a bad musical with lame cover songs. It's like if Glee decided to do a Taxi Driver-themed episode. It just doesn't work. And even the nod to Heath Ledger's Joker at the end can't save it. This movie sucked on many levels. If you want to see Lady Gaga sing in a movie where she falls in love with a horrible man, watch A Star Is Born instead. Number 40. The Flash. Had Zack Snyder's Justice League never seen the light of day, I might have been a little more accepting of this movie. Then again, maybe not. In the Snyder Cut, Flash, one of DC's most respected characters, is the hero who saves the world after it has already been destroyed. In the theatrical release of Justice League, the Flash, one of DC's most respected characters, was a joke. And this solo movie doubles down on the farce that began with the theatrical release. From the excruciating bit with Wonder Woman's magic lasso, to the team up with his even more annoying younger self, to the eye-rolling Clooney cameo, to the atrocious special effects, this movie was trash. Keaton and Affleck's Batman reprisals couldn't save this mess of a movie, and are probably the only reasons I kept it out of the bottom spot. The Flash was the first comic book I ever got, so this movie was important to me. I can even argue that everything we have about comic books today, including all the TV shows, the MCU, etc., are because of The Flash. But this movie tainted the character. Number 39. Wonder Woman 1984. This was one of the biggest sequel letdowns in recent movie history. The first movie was very good. You'll see how good when I rate it much later. The director was returning. The star was returning. The iconic villain was to be played by an underrated comedic actress. I was stoked. By the time it was over, My wife and I just stared at the screen and scoffed. Huh. Kristen Wiig's talent was wasted. Gal Gadot's talent was wasted. The Kingdom Come-inspired battle armor looked plastic and clunky and ill-advised. Pedro Pascal's Maxwell Lord was just stupid. And the movie is a prime example of what happens when creators care more about cramming their political statement into a movie than actually making a quality story. And Steve Trevor returns by, what, possessing the body of some stranger without that man's consent? And Wonder Woman's okay with that? It's just horrible all around. The only way to watch this movie for me in the future is with the Riff Tracks commentary mocking it. Number 38. Batman and Robin. You know, everybody talks about the bat nipples on the suit, but to me, the absolute nadir of Batman in all of his movies is the bat credit card. Stupid. Schwarzenegger's nonstop cold puns, Thurman's campy vamping, the degrading take on Bane. Every villain was awful. The best thing about this movie is it killed the franchise, and Batman would eventually go back to his more serious roots, at least until Whedon got a hold of him. Number 37. Steel. This comic book character was created specifically for the aftermath of the Death of Superman storyline in the 90s. He was inspired by Superman to use his mind and technological creations to become a hero. They eliminated all inspiration from Superman for this movie, and I suppose they still could have made the premise work. But they chose a basketball player for the lead role. And let me just say that Shaquille O'Neal is better at shooting free throws than he is at acting. The script seemed to be written by a freshman in his first high school creative writing class. The best thing about this movie is it is so instantly forgettable, you don't have time to hate yourself for watching it. Number 36. Jonah Hex. Like Halle Berry's Catwoman, the writers of Jonah Hex decided to give this post-Civil War bounty hunter superpowers. It turned what could have been a great comic book western into a necromancer searching for a man trying to destroy America with technology that doesn't exist and never has. It's The Sixth Sense meets Wild Wild West, with an animated backstory, a soundtrack that goes from bluegrass to arena rock, and everybody looks like they have a quarter-inch thick layer of sweat on them. In other words, it's a mismatched mess. Only a cast of great actors doing their best to hold it together kept this from going lower. Okay, so far I've done a bunch of movies that have been heavily panned by fans and critics, although I know there are some people who like Joker too. However, this next one is gonna piss off a lot of the polarized people. Number 35. James Gunn's Superman. I've gone into great detail on this in previous podcasts, so go listen to the expanded version if you want. But if I were to sum up how I feel about this movie in one word, it would be insulting. It's insulting to Krypto, the Kents, Jor-El and Laura, Lois, Jimmy, the entire staff of the Daily Planet, Hawk Girl, Ultraman, Punk Rock, Lex Luthor, and Superman himself. Only Nathan Fillion, Eddie Athege, and Anthony Carrigan keep this from dropping into the bottom five. Number 34. Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. Oh, what a way to go out. Thrown together with a low budget, and it certainly shows. They could have picked from a dozen decent Superman villains, but instead they go with a new character, the Nuclear Man, who, to DC Comics fans at the time, was actually a reference to the new hero, Firestorm. This was a product of the nuclear disarmament plot that Reeve wanted in order to get him to agree to reprise his role one more time. Lex was still campy, and his idiot sidekick changed from Ned Beatty's Otis to Lex's nephew, played by John Cryer. But villain campiness was a mainstay in that era of Superman movies. What keeps this from falling lower is that it still has Christopher Reeve playing Superman with all the Silver Age dignity of the character. Number 33. Supergirl. You know, I hadn't seen this movie in probably 40 years, so I rewatched it last week. HBO Max has the international cut, which is about 20 minutes longer than the US release, which only made the story slow and tedious. They definitely tried to make the villain, Selina, and her toady, Bianca, have the same dynamic as Lex Luthor and Otis in the Reeve movies, but it just didn't work. Faye Dunaway herself said that she played the character as a spoof, and it shows. As with Wonder Woman 84, there's also a questionable romantic subplot where Supergirl, posing as a teenage student at an all-girls school, is pursued by the adult groundskeeper who is compelled to fall in love with her because he's under a witch's spell. And holy shit, he's played by Ellis from Die Hard. You know, Ellis? Hans! Bubby! I'm your white knight. Yeah, that guy. Helen Slater is good as the babe in the woods, Kara, who comes to Earth to retrieve the lost power core of Argo City, even though she's the one who recklessly lost it in the first place. But at least her character is taken seriously, even though everything else around her is camp and foolishness. Number 32, Batman Forever. All the work Tim Burton did to bring Batman back to the darker tone of his early years and that had been prevalent in the comic books since the 70s was torn apart. I think I died a little inside when Chris O'Donnell's Robin proclaims, "Holy rusted metal, Batman!" Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones are like oil and water, both as characters and as actors, and should not have been in this movie together. In another part of the multiverse, Robin Williams plays Riddler, and Tim Burton stayed on as director, and I kind of wish we had gotten that instead. Still, Val Kilmer was really good. Number 31, Superman 3. I love Richard Pryor. He's one of the greatest comedians of all time. And I think it's great that he appeared in the Superman movie, but he deserved to be more than just goofy comic relief. Now, this is the only of the Reeve movies where Lex Luthor doesn't appear. And they could have used Brainiac as a villain, but instead, what we get is Robert Vaughn as a wealthy businessman, and a supercomputer that fuses with the bad guy's sister. It's another mess. But once again, at least it has Christopher Reeve. Even though it does get a little weird with Superman literally splitting into two beings and the good version strangles the bad version to death. Oh well. Number 30. Justice League, the theatrical release. Yes, I liked this movie when it first hit theaters. Let me explain that. Knowing that this was only partially Zack Snyder's movie, and had been drastically altered by Joss Whedon, I lowered my expectations considerably. Instead of going into the theater expecting to see another Zack Snyder experience, I expected a Marvel-esque movie, a simple, shallow plot, with heroes running around trying to stop the bad guy, never really looking like they would lose, and winning the day so everybody can smile when the last scene fades. This is my favorite superhero team of all time. So, given the behind-the-scenes circumstances, all I wanted was to see them on the big screen being heroes. I kept my expectations low, and they were met. Compared to Zack Snyder's version, this movie is awful. The Flash is a joke. Cyborg is an afterthought. Steppenwolf is a bore. Character depth is sacrificed for cheap jokes. The only reason to watch this version of the movie now is to show it along with the Snyder Cut as an example of how movie studio executives ruin things. Number 29. Superman Returns. This was the first attempt to try to invoke the spirit of the Christopher Reeve movies nearly 20 years after Quest for Peace killed the franchise. And Returns only did it marginally better than the 2025 insult. Superman comes back to Earth after a long space mission to find Lois is raising his son with another man? That's all kinds of messed up for a Superman movie, but okay. The big problem for me was recycling the same plot as the first Reeve movie, with Lex trying to sink California again. You know what? Star Wars has done the destroy the Death Star bit 3 times. If you can't come up with a new threat for your sequel, don't make it. On the other hand, the plane rescue is one of the best Superman scenes on film. And Brandon Routh does a respectable turn, treating the character with some pathos. Number 28. Batman, the Adam West version. I am being generous with this ranking to a certain extent, but it's also a situation where I can't justify putting it any lower. Batman has a long history in comics, and part of that history is an era of wacky adventures aimed straight at children, which then inspired the 60s Batman television show and spawned this movie. That campy era emerged as a result of public outcry that was churned up by fear-mongering moralists, and publishers feared government intervention, so they preemptively self-censored with the Comics Code, and they curtailed creators into more children-friendly fare, stunting the natural maturation of comic book stories for 20 years. The Batman TV show, and subsequently this movie, was cute and silly. But it was born out of that era of threats and censorship, and that just doesn't sit well with me. To be honest, it only made it this high because so much else has been that much worse. What it comes down to for me is, yes, this movie is sentimentally twee, but it's also just dumb. Number 27, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. This movie leaned heavily into the camp and irreverence that Warner Brothers was demanding from DC projects in order to be more like Marvel. Characters eating cockroaches, Mira using her powers to make her infant child's urine hit Aquaman in the face, and cliche jokes overwhelming what should have been a strong sequel. In fact, if they cut out all of that stupid stuff, this movie would have been much higher on the list. Number 26, Suicide Squad. I've said it many times before. This group of street-level villains had no business going up against a strong, magical threat. It was a huge mistake to have guys with guns and boomerangs go up against an ancient sorceress. The dialogue is groan-inducing. "Stay evil, dollface," is still one of the all-time stupidest lines from a comic book movie. Still, it has Margot Robbie, Jay Hernandez, and Viola Davis giving us great roles. For me, I definitely want to see that Ayers cut. Number 25. Shazam, Fury of the Gods. A lot of people said this movie was too much like the first. But the first movie was Billy finding the family he didn't know he needed. This movie was all about Billy clinging too tightly to his family because he was afraid of losing them. Yeah, they turned the once dignified wizard Shazam into a goofy joke, and they opted to go with new villains instead of something from the character's vast rogues gallery. But Helen Mirren and Lucy Liu were pretty darn good. On the other hand, failing to deliver on the Dr. Savannah-Mr. Mind team-up is a major mistake. There is one big problem with both Shazam movies, but I will address that later. Number 24, Green Lantern. This is my all-time favorite superhero. Yet this is the highest I felt this movie deserved. I've said it before, and I will say it again. After the rise of the Silver Surfer, DC should have learned that your main villain should not be a cloud. The Guardians of the Universe look absolutely stupid with the clear domes on their heads that make you question how these beings could possibly purport to being wise and powerful. Hal Jordan would never have lost that plane at the beginning of the movie, and he would not have quit two lessons into his training as a Green Lantern. Those are the really big problems that needed to be fixed before this movie came out. I actually did like the suit as CGI, because at that time in the comics, the suit was actually another ring construct. That being said, they should have toned it down, as the suit was just way too busy. The constructs themselves could have used better imagination, but that is also on par with the Jordan character. Mark Strong is just great as Sinestro, Ryan Reynolds is above average as Hal Jordan. The movie is not as bad as a lot of people try to make it out to be. But it's also not nearly as good as it could have been. Number 23, Birds of Prey. This movie had a lot of things going against it. It was released right as COVID hit. Many people found the longer original title to be off-putting, and it featured a superhero team that most people, outside of DC's fans, were unfamiliar with. Margot Robbie, though, was really good in capturing the scatterbrained insanity of Harley Quinn. Huntress stayed pretty close to her post-crisis continuity. And I do wish that they hadn't strayed so far from Black Canary's origin, but I still like Journey Smollett in that role. And I thought Ewan McGregor as Black Mask was actually a pretty good villain, walking the line between mob boss and flamboyant sociopath. Plus, it had very well-choreographed fight scenes featuring distinct styles for each of the characters. So yeah, it was okay. Number 22. The Suicide Squad. You see, this is James Gunn's bailiwick. Despicable or mentally disturbed or morally objectionable characters doing outlandishly crass things. Yes, he once again killed an alien creature that was being used for evil by the bad guys. Yes, he gives roles to family members instead of other actors. But if I'm going to have James Gunn do a comic book movie, this is the kind I would want, and keep him away from the rest. Again, I've gone over this in the Superman podcast last year, so check those out if you want to hear more details. Number 21, Joker. I know this is going to confuse a lot of people why I would rank this movie so low. It is absolutely a very engrossing and well-acted movie about a mentally damaged man giving in to the pressures of life and almost makes some of the lead character's actions sympathetic. But this is not an easy movie to watch. It's dirty. Nearly every character is unlikable. And having watched it through 3 times now, I'm not anticipating watching it again anytime soon. The other big problem I have with this movie is it really is Joker in name only. Like Catwoman, nothing about this character matches up with the various iterations in the comic books, and that also causes it to lose points in my rankings. Number 20. Black Adam. This movie made me want more Pierce Brosnan as Dr. Fate, and I liked the little glimpse into the Justice Society. The big problem is Black Adam is not good enough to be a lead character. He's too stoic and too narrowly focused to merit lead status. That's why the comic books where he's the lead character never really take off. Still, it was a decent effort by Dwayne Johnson, and better than I expected it to be. Number 19. Blue Beetle. This movie deserved better than what it got. While it is still strictly adherent to the Marvel style with a heavy dose of obvious jokes, forgettable villains, and style over substance, it also relies on the Marvel style of charismatic actors in lead roles to distract you from the shallow recycled plots. Yes, this movie is basically involuntary Iron Man. But Yolanda Moreno's charm and sincerity keeps it together. Warner Brothers seriously dropped the ball with this one, and people should give it a watch if they haven't already. I'm not saying it's a great movie, but it's fun and underrated. Number 18, Shazam. I love Zachary Levi. I liked him as Shazam. I liked how this movie was actually a little scary at times, even though it was geared toward a wider audience. The one really big problem is that it's too much like big. See, this movie is inspired by the New 52 version of the character, which has adult Shazam with the emotional maturity of a kid, Billy Batson. However, Shazam is supposed to have the wisdom of Solomon. Therefore, throughout most of his comic book history, when he is Shazam, he may have a childlike innocence about him, but he still makes adult decisions with that wisdom. At least they acknowledge this at the end of the second movie, and I kind of wish we had gotten a third movie where they solved that mystery. Nevertheless, this was still a pretty fun movie, with great performances from Levi, Mark Strong, John Glover, really the entire cast. Number 17, Batman Returns. Tim Burton really leans into the unsettling and grotesque in this movie. Danny DeVito's Penguin is tough to look at, even though he goes all in with his performance. And Michelle Pfeiffer, well, what can you say? She's iconic. Certainly not as good as the first Keaton movie, but still a wild ride. Number 16, The Batman. In the opening scene of the movie, when the guy is watching the news report, I predicted the killer would be behind him. And even when I was proven correct, it still wowed me. I admit it, I really liked this outside-the-box take on the Riddler. And this is also my favorite Catwoman, since she was based on Frank Miller's Year One storyline. Now, Pattinson's Batman is a good fighter for a Batman in his first year in the costume. But he's certainly not the detective, since Alfred cracks the code for him. And he is the worst Bruce Wayne of the whole bunch. Look, I know it's politically fashionable to have him not care about Wayne Enterprises, but you stupid, stupid man. The company is important because that is how you get all those wonderful toys. Number 15. Aquaman. The record holder for the most money made by a DC movie, not adjusted for inflation. This movie was quite good, with beautiful visual concepts for Atlantis, even if they linger on it far too long. The Deep looked every bit as terrifying as they do in the comic books, and it was another huge Warner Brothers mistake not making the spin-off horror movie about them. I've never understood the impracticality of Black Manta's helmet, but I am glad that they kept it comics accurate. They leaned into the underwater oddities of the comics, but managed to do so without turning it into all-out wackiness like they did in the sequel. Great job with Aquaman. All right, ready for the curveball? Number 14. Superman and the Mole Man. This movie, made in 1951 at a time when comic books really were still being geared towards children, takes the story far more seriously than James Gunn's iteration, and slightly more seriously than even the Christopher Reeve version. There is no campiness in this movie. Not with the hero, not with Lois, not with the villains, not even with the Mole Man. And yes, the costumes of the Mole Man were pretty bargain basement, and there are no special effects. But the story is compelling, and the actors treat their roles and the subject matter with respect. To be honest, I kind of want to put this movie even higher. Number 13. The Dark Knight Rises. No, this movie is definitely not as good as The Dark Knight. But that opening scene with Bane and his crew kidnapping the scientist is amazing. The stadium scene is jaw-dropping. Yes, Talia's death scene proved that even Christopher Nolan makes bad decisions. And yes, there's no reason why John Blake's real name shouldn't have been Richard Grayson instead of Robin. Still, for the final act of a trilogy that was meant to have a definitive end for the character, this was a good movie. Bear with me on the next two, because they pretty much meld together. Number 12, Superman, the Christopher Reeve movie. This is what the average person thinks of if you were to ask them about an iconic Superman. There's plenty of great things to say about Christopher Reeve's performance. It's also better when viewed through nostalgia filters, because I have argued in previous podcasts that if you rewatch the theatrical versions with more pragmatic eyes, you realize this Superman has some flaws. And again, I covered this also last year in relation to the new Superman movie, so you can hear more if you'd like. All that being said, it is a fantastic movie for its time, and great for reminiscing about the good old days, if you don't think too hard about it. Number 11, Superman 2. Basically, everything I just said about the first movie, but add that while the early years of Superman had this in abundance as the character was evolving, I don't like it when they give a hero powers he's never had before. Superman cannot teleport, even short distances. He cannot conjure up duplicates of himself. And he sure as hell doesn't have a cellophane S to briefly subdue a foe before dissolving. Nor can he kiss you to make you forget his secret identity, which is not only morally questionable, but something he does a second time in Quest for Peace. Despite those issues, I still rank these two high due to Reeve, and in the case of the second movie, also Terrence Stamp's Zod, who, like Reeve, gave a performance that was perfect for that era. All right, look at this, top 10. And number 10, Swamp Thing. Like Superman and the Mole Man, low budget doesn't have to mean a bad movie. Yes, the monster suits were very obviously rubber. Yes, there is quite a bit of scenery chewing by Arcane's henchmen. But you have Ray Wise, Adrian Barbeau, and Dick Durock especially giving heartfelt performances. And Louis Jourdan is equal parts elegant and menacing. It treated the source material with respect, unlike the sequel. And it's great no matter how many times you rewatch it. Number 9. Batman with Michael Keaton. If I was making this list 25 years ago, this would be at the top. This, to me, was the gold standard of comic book movies of the 20th century. Now, I'm not a big fan of giving Joker a name, or making him a high-level gangster, or making him the killer of Bruce's parents. But I understand why they did it for the story. This was finally something like the Batman I had been reading in the comic books for 10 years instead of the sanitized Saturday morning cartoons. Joker was finally a deadly threat. This was finally a movie that took a comic book character seriously on all levels. There was still humor, but it wasn't camp or forced. It was subtle and natural, like how Alfred quietly followed Bruce around at the party, preventing accidents. This opened the door to get some respect for these characters, and ever since, movie studios, misguided directors, and even some comic book creators themselves have done their best to get that door shut again and go back to the campiness and silliness. Number 8. Constantine. Do I wish that this movie had a blonde, British John Constantine set in London? Absolutely. But Keanu Reeves absolutely kills it as an American version of the character. The special effects are amazing. Rachel Wise, Jimon Hunsu, Tilda Swinton, even Gavin Rossdale are all fantastic. But in just a couple of minutes of screen time, Peter Stormare is absolutely amazing as Lucifer. They've been talking about a sequel for years, and with the exception of one movie coming up just a little bit later in this list, it is the most deserving. Number 7. Watchmen. Jackie Earl Haley, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Billy Crudup, Malin Ackerman, and Patrick Wilson were all spot on with their performance. I did not care for Matthew Good's performance, and I wonder how much of that had to do with Zack Snyder's direction. See, I can criticize a director and still love his work. Especially when Ozymandias completes his plan. In the comics, he throws his hands in the air and he shouts in triumph. But in the movie, he solemnly speaks of all the people he sacrificed, which matches his more subdued personality in the movie. I never liked that. I mean, this guy thinks he's perfect. So he wouldn't be humble or reverent about the success of his carefully choreographed plan to murder millions. That being said, I actually prefer the movie plan of using Dr. Manhattan's powers on cities across the globe in lieu of the single fake space alien from the comics. Multiple worldwide attacks, matching the energy signature of a known entity, is much more likely to unite the world against a common enemy than a single alien killing people in one city in America, which just happens to be the only world power in this story. If anything, the attack on New York in the comic book would inspire other nations to rise up against the U.S. Regardless of all that, this is still a mostly faithful adaptation, with shots in the movie matching panels from the comic book itself. Number 6. Batman Begins. If it wasn't for Heath Ledger's amazing turn in the sequel, this would be my favorite Batman movie. even though we've seen Thomas and Martha Wayne's death way too many times in movies and TV, this is the only one that explores his path from that night to putting on the costume. Cillian Murphy is great as Scarecrow, and I love how each person's reaction to his fear gas is different. And then you've got Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman, and Gary Oldman, a murderer's row of acting talent, and they're all in supporting roles. You can't say you love Batman if you don't love this movie. Number 5. Wonder Woman. Simply a stunning movie that was everything the sequel wasn't. The life on Themyscira and the prowess of the Amazons are pulled straight out of George Perez's stellar run on the character. The contrast between the beautiful island and the dreary, polluted London drive home what she left behind when she chose to fight. And even subtle little things like the true identity of the chief being crafted into the story give it so much more depth. The No Man's Land scene is one of the greatest in comic book movies, followed very closely by the liberation of Veld. I still think that the final battle should have shown Ares in his full comic book form, with his face hidden in darkness under his helmet, with only 2 red eyes visible. As it was done, it really just looks like Wonder Woman beating up an old man. Everything else, though, is fantastic. Number 4. The Dark Knight. 2 words. Heath Ledger. Yes, the same argument I made about Joaquin Phoenix's Joker could apply, as Ledger's Joker was not created by falling into a vat of chemicals. The difference is, Ledger's Joker, with his multi-layered plots, terrifying menace, and obsession with Batman, are a pitch-perfect match to the modern era of the comic book character. Do his plans in the movie make sense? Only if you account for a lot of variables to all work out in a very specific manner. But so what? Every scene with Ledger in it is perfect, and he deserved to win the Oscar. Even when he's not on the screen, his presence permeates the movie. And all apologies to Aaron Eckhart, who was fantastic as Two-Face. In any other situation, his role would be the one lauded. This is the best solo Batman movie because it features the best villain performance any comic book movie has ever seen. Number 3. Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. The theatrical release had some problems because of the constant interference from executives, so it has some confusing scenes early in the movie that make a hell of a lot more sense in the Ultimate Edition. Since I'm trying to focus on just what was shown in the theaters, I want to acknowledge that the movie was lessened with the loss of those few minutes. Nevertheless, Bruce Wayne's distrust of Superman makes perfect sense within the context of the movie. It even all comes together once you realize Lex Luthor knew both of their secret identities and was manipulating them both the entire time. In fact, while I was never one of those people who mocked the Martha turning point, I did wonder if there was a better way for Bruce to see Superman as something other than alien. However, I finally realized something while I was rewatching it last year. Just before their fight, Superman calls Batman Bruce. And then it all clicked. After overhearing Alfred and Bruce at Lex's party, Superman pieces together that Batman is Bruce Wayne. Like any good reporter, he would look into Wayne's past and learn his parents were murdered, and therefore know their names. And in a last-ditch effort to get through to him, he says the one name that would shock Bruce. I no longer think of "Save Martha" as a bad line. Any other comic book movie in the modern era would have put the footage of Flash and Aquaman and Cyborg in mid or post-credit scenes. But this was woven into the main story, and I like that much more. Wonder Woman's entrance into the Doomsday fight is one of the all-time great comic book moments. This movie is unfairly derided by people who just weren't paying attention. Number 2. Zack Snyder's Justice League. I woke up so I could watch this the moment it dropped on HBO Max at 2 a.m. my time. And it was worth every moment. Yes, it had its problems. I don't like the idea of Martian Manhunter disguising himself as Martha Kent. That just didn't sit well with me. I don't think I ever need to see a sesame seed dropping in slow motion. But there's nothing that is so egregious it lessens the movie. I don't think for a moment that this is what we would have gotten if Snyder had been able to finish his movie back in 2017. He probably would have cut it back to around 3 hours. But I think he was just going to put as much into this version as he could, and I'm glad he did. Flash went from awkward comic relief to the hero who rose to the occasion and literally turned back time to save the entire world. Cyborg felt like his Wolfman and Perez New Teen Titans origins, where he resented his father and felt detached from the world. Steppenwolf went from bland first movie villain to a powerful menace. We finally get to see Darkseid and not just hear his name. Superman in the black costume, with Jor-El and Jonathan Kent's voices guiding him to greatness. Hell, even the second nightmare scene with Batman and Joker, where even the end of the world can't keep them from antagonizing each other, is damn near perfect. This movie deserves a sequel. And even though I really don't believe it will ever actually happen, I will still hold out hope. Now, if you know your DC movies, this one's pretty obvious. Number 1, Man of Steel. For much more detail on this and other Snyder-directed DC movies, you can go through my website and see a few podcasts on it, especially last year in relation to James Gunn's movie. For now, I just have to say that this is a near-perfect Superman movie. The important thing is, if you watch it, you cannot carry the baggage with you of the Christopher Reeve movies, or really any other Superman movie. You have to follow the story within this particular continuity. Clark Kent blatantly insults his adopted father, Jonathan, And before he can apologize, disaster strikes. And the final thing that Clark does for his adopted father that he just egregiously insulted is obey him. Clark only uses his powers to help and save people, but never to fight. Clark Kent, Superman, does not know how to fight, and he's going up against a genetically engineered Kryptonian warrior who is learning to use his new superpowers exponentially faster than Clark ever did. So, of course, Clark is more focused on the all-out brawl than he is about innocent bystanders. Jonathan Kent, like any parent should be, is more concerned about the well-being of his son than he is about anyone else's children, and is so afraid of what the world would do to his teenage son if they found out he was an alien, that he is conflicted when Clark asks if he should have let his classmates die in a bus crash instead of saving them. All these are just part of Clark's journey as he considers the best way to use his abilities to help the world while still trying to understand and accept his own self. This movie humanizes Superman far deeper than any other iteration. And even though Superman is pretty far down on my favorite list of comic book characters, this is tops on my list of favorite comic book movies. Well, that's the list for now. As much as I want to hope that the new Supergirl movie will be good, I have learned not to get my hopes up anymore. Yes, Jason Momoa as Lobo is damn near perfect casting, but that can only go so far. Fortunately, I have plenty of good existing movies, so even if DC continues to disappoint in the theaters, I can still go to my movie collection and see when it was more than just run-of-the-mill comic book movies. It was a cinematic experience. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.